Hey there, folks. Alex Lokes here, and welcome back to Classic Camera Revival. We have an interesting episode today for us because some days my memory feels like it's a hard drive in bad need of defragmentation, and other days it feels like I'm running on the latest and fastest flash memory. So let's roll the intro before I forget to do that, and we're going to dig into a bit of nostalgia today.
Welcome to the Classic Camera Revival, coming to you from the Greater Toronto Hamilton region of Ontario, Canada. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you most likely will by the end of the episode.
And we're back. And yes, today we are talking about photographic nostalgia. And around our table today, we got Bill, Chris, and James. And nostalgia is both wonderful and dangerous, so we're going to dig into both. So let's get started. James, let's just start with you.
Okay. I've been giving this some thought for a little while because I've shot so many cameras through my whole life, I guess, but primarily more so, I think, in my adult life, because, you know, when I was a kid, I really couldn't afford very much. So my nostalgic camera is the Minolta XGM. The reason why does that bring up feelings of nostalgia for me? It's because it's the camera that I basically sort of learned how photography worked, how to shoot. I learned the exposure triangle using it. I learned manual exposure. I learned how to bracket. I just kind of learned everything with it. It was the camera that I used when I took my first high school photography class. So it really is one of those things that brings back a lot of fond memories because I think for a lot of us, especially those of us that are sort of in the older generations, the ones sort of grew up where there was no such thing as film photography, it was just photography and it happened to be on film. So a lot of those memories for me were in the high school darkroom where I saw film come to life, where I would pull my first rolls of film out of the tank, and I would develop my own film. And a lot of those images were shot on the Minolta XGM. Great camera. Why do I like this camera so much? It's one of those sort of, gosh, it's like the Swiss Army knife of cameras. Like it kind of ticks so many boxes. Not overly expensive, excellent viewfinder, had aperture priority, had AE mode, had full manual mode, center weighted metering, had LED shutter speed display, just a really cool camera for something that was introduced in 1981. For those that are in the Japanese market, the XGM, its counterpart, and the XGM was a North American moniker, and then in the Japanese market, it was the X70. Just perfect balance of cameras when you're looking at cost, functionality, ease of use. Just, you know, I really think it's one of those underrated cameras today. Like a lot of people I find will go and gravitate towards like a Pentax K1000 because that's what they learned on, or that's sort of perceived as kind of the photographer's or the beginning photographer's camera because it's fully manual. But when you kind of add the AE and the aperture priority, the big bright viewfinder of the XGM, I don't think you can really go wrong. So it makes me smile every time I think about it. And the sad part, the most pathetic part of this conversation that I'm kind of having with myself and all of you is that I no longer have an XGM. So I have to go out and find myself a nice example of an XGM, maybe a nice 51.7 to go along with it, and get that back on my shelf and get shooting it again, because I really, enjoy the camera. And of course, to go along with my XGM, it was always loaded with a roll of Ilford FP4. Ilford FP4 was the first film I ever shot. The first one I ever shot and developed that I can remember. I remember souping it in Ilfisol 3, 9-1 for 9 minutes, and that was kind of the baseline recipe that you sort of used for everything. And it's just a great all around. I would call it probably one of the most versatile films out there. And the cool thing about FP4 for 125 speed, sort of, you know, slow to medium speed film, you could pull that film a couple of stops. You could push it up to six stops. The most I ever pushed it and was kind of happy with the results was four stops. But just, you know, great all around film. Great contrast tones, great mid contrast film. You know, sharp, you know, for a cubic grain film. And there's nostalgia for you because that film's been around since the earth cooled. So I would imagine if you found me 100 film photographers and you put them in one room, I'd probably be able to show you 99 photographers that have shot FP4 in their lifetime. So just a great all around film for me. Gosh, in terms of location, I don't know. There's so many, but for me, it's because my film photography journey or my photography journey started in high school, and I have like fond recollections of shooting my high school photography assignments. I grew up in Brampton before Brampton was what we know of Brampton today. It was a much more peaceful community back in the 70s and 80s and early 90s. But there was a quarry that was there, and it was this park, and I would always go there, and I would shoot either sunsets on one side of the quarry, sort of lake or pond or whatever you want to call it. And there was always geese, and there were always birds, and there was a trail through the forest. And I actually, gosh, probably the last time I would go there, I probably haven't been there since prior to COVID, but I would always pop over there on my lunchtime and go for a walk to test either film or a camera, or just to kind of relive some happy sort of younger day memories and just walk around and remember the things that I would shoot. So I hope we all have one of those locations or one of those things that bring back those fond memories of, you know, I think, is it the John Lennon song, When Income Tax Was All We Had? You know, when life stresses you out, sometimes you just kind of hit, you gotta rewind to fast forward some days, right? So sometimes it's really good to get out there and relive some fond memories and just kind of push the reset button on your brain. But those are the three sort of nostalgic things for me. And I'm sure there'll be more as we continue this conversation, but that's where I'll start.
Oh, and yeah, the XGM is a great camera. I had one for a bit. I think I got it off of Trevor, and then I traded it for a bunch of film to Bill's brother, Alex. But the lens you really want is the 45 f2.
Oh, definitely the 45 yep. f2.
They are dirt cheap, and they just have this small, they just work really well with that camera.
And it sort of echoes James. My brother learned on the Minolta XGM going on 24, 25 years ago. He did sort of like a continuing ed course at George Brown in photography before they switched to digital. And his body was the Minolta XGM. I was self-taught and I had a Canon AE-1. Don't own a Canon AE-1. Not really nostalgic for it either. But, you know, that's
just... Yeah. I hear you. You know, it's hard to get nostalgic about sort of like, I mean, for lack of a better description, fully automatic cameras, you know, like you need that element of some manual stuff, although we'll wax lyrical about my F6 all day. That'll be my nostalgic camera when I'm 80 years old. But for now, it's still the XGM.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, Bill, please.
Oh,
continue.
I think nostalgia, it's kind of, I was sort of wrestling with this for a couple of days. And, you know, I could talk about the Nikon F, the Leica M3, my dad's Nikkor Matte. Those were his, or I think his Leica 3G. Those were the cameras I remember him using. And I'm shooting regularly with the Nikkor Matte that's at Joann's. I recently bought a red dot Nikon F and I had a spare eye level prism. So I basically replicated my dad's camera and I'm playing with that. And it's just that sort of reassuring shutter sound from a Nikon F that is just like, yep, I feel just like home. And the Leica 3G, I for those who are just tuning in, I recently fell down the Leica Barnack Leica rabbit hole with the 3F, and I then just sort of found a 3G, and my dad had a 3G. My brother inherited the 3G, or more like my dad gifted my brother the 3G about 3 weeks before dad passed. So, I'm just doing that time-honored Smith tradition. If my brother has something, I gotta have it too. And believe me, he did that when I had him my the M3 and the early Nikon F. So, those cameras are, I feel reassured. It's like my dad's not far away, because I kind of remember that. He used those cameras photographing the family, took them on family trips. It's that sort of set of reassurance. Now, film stock, it's, well, Agfa APX is gonzo. So, as much as I like to wax lyrical about that, again, I'll echo James with F Ilford FP4, and then I'll add HP5 to the mix. I still shoot HP5 to this day, FP4. I got four rolls upstairs that I'm probably going to shoot at some point soon. And I got a bulk roll sitting somewhere in storage waiting to be moved so I can bulk load like mad when I'm at the other end for summertime. So that's my nostalgic film stocks. You can process them in a variety of different chemicals and get amazing results. And that's what we want. Now, in terms of places, now this is a weird one because it's like I was invited up by some friends from the Oakville Camera Club at the time to a photography retreat in northern Muskoka over 10 years ago. And I've also been exploring the northeast corner of Durham region, which is sort of Brock Township, which is kind of on the way. And both of those were sort of like places I would, I would look forward to photographing every year. Like Brock Township, in this case, which is around Cannington and Beaverton, is where my family settled in what is now Ontario 200 years ago. And there have been sort of, doing some more research, has been sort of some, a family connection of sorts to northern Muskoka. My granddad belonged to a fishing club out of Montreal. And he and his buddies would used to camp in Algonquin Park. And I think at some point in the 40s, they owned a cottage somewhere in the Muskokas, because I discovered an ad that my granddad was trying to sell the cottage. But that said, getting back to the photography retreat, we go to the same resort every year, and we do a lot of landscape photography. And over the past decade or so, for me, it was like a couple of days respite from elder care. Whereas I'm a civilian, I don't have to deal, mom would have had to have, it became sort of, I didn't have to, worry about mom for a few days. And it was just sort of, now it's just, my girlfriend is now coming up with me on these retreats, and she loves it. She's originally from North Bay, so she's well familiar with the landscape. And for me, it's sort of like, I shake it up with the equipment every year, and it's also a doc. The landscape changes a ton, and it doesn't at all at the same time, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
And I just adore shooting, photographing along the way along Highway 35. So that again is it's one of those sort of roads when you drive. I drive up it to get to where I need to go. I'm not saying where exactly because I don't want the entire universe to show up. Sorry, guys.
Just don't do the loop through Lindsay.
No, don't do the loop. But usually, my rule of thumb is you take the 404 right to the end. You find your way to the Trans-Canada. You stop in Beaverton for the morning at Shortest Cafe for coffee and baked goods, and then cut over to 35 north of Lindsay and just go north on 35 and. You can either lunch in Minden, Carnarvon, or Dorset, depending on how early you leave in the morning. And of course, there are a couple of really good craft breweries along the way. Halliburton Highlands Brewing is just actually moving to Carnarvon proper. So it makes actually, you don't have to do that detour along 118 east by about 20 minutes.
Did you pass through Cobo Conk?
Yes.
There we go.
I love Kobokonk is a, I photographed it, I think, 1 year. It's a funny place to shoot because I love the vibe, but it's just how the village is situated. It's the lighting. And I'm like, yeah, it's like if it's a super sunny day, it's like the side of the road you want isn't going to be lit properly until late in the day or vice versa. And it's just like, and then when you do get the good lighting, it's also peak travel time for everyone coming back from up north.
Oh, yeah. So the very first entry in my photo log is from a youth cottage retreat at a cottage in Minden.
Mm.
And we got lost on the way driving up there. We looped through Lindsay twice.
Oh, boy.
And the village of Kobokonk just stands out in my head as one we passed through. So,
and that was in 2002. Like some weird loop.
Oh, I wrote a whole horror story about it. It's absolutely awful.
Actually,
I think I still have the file somewhere.
There's an old train station that was the, I guess, the terminal end of the Toronto Nipissing Railway.
Okay.
It ended in Kobokonk.
Yep.
It never made it to Nipissing.
I had such high hopes and dreams, though.
Well, yeah, I was
most
like,
of them did.
Most of them did. There were a lot of those old 19th century railways were inches away from bankruptcy. But you know, Kobokonk is actually, it's a fun village to share. Like again, I sort of call that Kawarthas, Halliburtons, Eastern End of the Muskoka is almost more true cottage country because it's a little less gentrified. Rich. Well, yeah, when you get to like Lake Rosso or Lake, you know, west of Highway 11, it's very showbiz.
Mm.
NHL hockey player.
But still very friendly.
If you
get the right people.
Yes, exactly. But again, another amazing place to photograph is the village of Dorset.
Oh, definitely.
And a big shout out to my girlfriend, Joanne. She, one Christmas, bought me tickets to ride the big one. So we rode around Lake of Bays.
Nice.
And I just had a ball. I just, you know, wound up shooting motion picture stock Ektachrome 100 that day. So, yeah, those are the two the nostalgic places. Like again, it's also, you know, if we want to talk about Brock Township, Cannington is where my, you know, great grandfather had his feed store in the late 19th century, early 20th century. I had a great uncle that was a town doctor up in Beaverton. The family cottage on Lake Simcoe is still in the family, not my branch, but it's still in the family, and hopefully it stays in the family going forward. But again, it's sort of a feeling of, it's like, yeah, this is sort of, I wouldn't say home, but you kind of feel, yeah, this is where I'm sort of, the familia came from before it came.
Still like, there's still roots there.
That's the best way to describe it.
Nice.
I can appreciate that. I mean, like, it's kind of nice that like you said before, earlier, Alex, in like your intro, there's like all these different places that kind of like, that kind of like trigger memories or kind of different places that like you kind of like think back to sometimes. So it's kind of, I think it's actually really nice, Bill, that you have like a few different places, and it sounds like you're also like expanding that as well with like Joanne, like including her into into like your history, and then like you guys are making newer memories on like kind of the go forward. So like I really like that, and I really appreciate stuff like that.
Yeah, and again, we also go down to Niagara on the lake a fair bit. So it's like, it's a fun spot to disappear for the day.
It's been a long time since I've been to Niagara on the lake, so I'll change that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to get out there.
Yeah, you got to escape the couple of boxes of Polaroid film.
There you go.
I do have boxes of film. I thought it was actually funny because at the beginning of April, I decided to go out with the goose, and I took photos, and then I put those photos. I did like four or five of them. I put them in my bag and I forgot about them. It's like, oh, shoot. And apparently when you peel it, it leaves some sadness behind, but that's okay. I am embracing my mistakes, but yeah, maybe.
Just a bunch of happy accidents.
Yeah,
absolutely. So
all good.
Chris, how about you?
How about me? What can I say? Apologies in advance. It's we're filming this at the end of April, and I work in the wonderful, wonderful field of accounting, so I am very sleep deprived and tired right now. But I was thinking about this too, kind of like Bill was thinking about it as well. Like, I was trying to think about what I would think about as my nostalgic camera, and honestly, like, I kind of think about the first camera that I got, which was like a Nikon FE, which I got from my dad. As much as I really wanted to like joke at that having like my nostalgic camera be a Polaroid, like I think the true honest answer is the Nikon FE. I remember going to university and then like kind of being gifted slash I might have skillfully acquired said camera. And I remember just like having a blast, just like kind of like going around, just like taking pictures around the University of Guelph campus. So I think kind of like when I think about locations and when I think about my like cameras, I think about the Nikon FE because a lot of film photography and a lot of just like learning how to like shoot in general, I learned from that camera. And I learned it mostly shooting with one of my friends that I had at Guelph at the time, like shooting around the campus. I didn't get to do a lot of developing like in the early days. I shot a lot of color film, but specifically I shot a lot of expired Kodak Gold. Because one of my other friends, like later on, he gifted me like mini boxes of it. But my friend Katie, who I was shooting in Guelph, she had like a bunch of it. So we just shot around campus and we shot up with this film. And I just remember like because Guelph has this giant like kind of like green space. It's called Johnson Green. I just remember like shooting down there because there's like this one path between the two different buildings, between a couple different buildings. So you see where all the students have like created their own path. And I just remember like shooting on there. I remember shooting at different times of the day. So like learning about like golden hour and learning about posing because like, we used to shoot together, shoot each other. And it was just kind of like a really good time. And I think about a lot of like learning how to shoot manually because I did shoot a lot of auto because it was like kind of easier, especially when you're learning. Learning how to shoot kind of like manual, which I think I kind of got later on after I met Alex. And then learning how to do things like that way. So when I think about like cameras, I definitely think about the Nikon FE, which is still a camera that if I'm shooting like a new roll of film, I tend to gravitate towards that camera first because I kind of know its quirks. I know where certain light leaks are going to happen. And it's, I don't know, it's just, it just fills me with happiness that I'm still kind of using it in its own like weird way. But yeah, I think for camera, definitely it's like the Nikon FE definitely takes the cake in that. Location probably is going to be Guelph, just because, like I said, that's kind of where I learn to shoot majority of my like photographic beginnings was in Guelph. I didn't take photography in high school or anything like that. And a lot of the reason why I started shooting was because, well, I was trying to make friends. So it was just kind of like a nice way just to kind of branch out. And Guelph itself is just like a beautiful city in general. So even now when I go back to Guelph every now and then just to visit the campus to see how much it's changed, I still see like little parts that are still like the same as what it was before. So like a classic example is that when I was a student, like back in the day, walking up and downhill like 5 miles or whatever. No, I'm just kidding. But back in the day when I was going there, they were building what we call the new science center, and like I go there now, and now it's just called the science center. It's like, oh, that's different. But yeah, no, I think like for like locations, definitely it would be probably like the Guelph, and just tying that into just like alma mater and all that fun stuff. And yeah, I think for film, it's probably Kodak Gold just because I learned to shoot on it, and because I always shot with expired film because it was cheaper. I kind of always liked those like little quirks. And I think when I really think about it, like I think that's probably why I don't mind some of the inconsistencies is the word I'm going to use when it comes to Polaroids, because I have to bring it back to Polaroids because it's me. Because I'm so used to all those like kind of like quirks and the overexposures or just things not being like absolutely perfect. So that's probably the three that I have there. The other one that was a close second was actually a Rolleiflex that I actually also got from my dad. I shoot with one medium format camera whenever I do shoot medium format, and it is the Rolleiflex. And I remember very distinctly that it was just sitting like on my dad's shelf, and he told me if I can get it working, that I could have it. And I immediately messaged, I'm pretty sure James or Alex, to be like, where can I get a Rolleiflex fixed? And then that's how I got the Rolleiflex. And I remember shooting, I think the first thing I shot on there was, might have been HP5, actually. I remember it was a black and white film. It might have been HP5, maybe. But I remember shooting it, and I remember it being terrible because all the light sensors were broken. And that's how I learned how to shoot a Sony 16. So there you go.
Nice.
Yeah, I remember trying my brother's Rolleiflex automat. This is like 2000. And I said, here, you should try medium format. So he loaned it to me for a while. And I had a couple of rolls at FP4, ran through, saw the end results. And it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Handed it back. Didn't think about it for 6 months. I think he was moving house in 2009. I had to look after my brother's camera collection. So I did what he's doing for me right now. I got to play with the automat for a couple of months and fell in love with it. And it's like, oh, damn, now I understand why. And yeah, I'm a Rolleiflex guy forever.
It is just like a gorgeous camera. One of my favorite photos I've ever taken, like in my kind of like photo career, there's a few of them, but one of the ones that I remember, this is like a while ago, Downtown Camera used to have like film testers. Maybe they still do. I just haven't been there in a while. And I remember when they first got CineStill, I remember I was like one of the lucky few that was able to test out like the rolls. And I had CineStill, the 120. And I remember shooting it in daytime because when I picked it up, they said to me, it's like, oh yeah, try day or like night because we want to see what it's like. And I remember taking it and shooting it in the TTC subway, just doing like a long shot all the way down. And it's probably my favorite shot I ever took, and then I didn't know what to expect, but it was, the results were just fantastic. Just like hustle bustle of Toronto streets, and I think because it is better usually for low lights, it made it okay to shoot like in a subway. And just, I don't know, it's something about it just brings me unreasonable happiness.
Nice. I still remember the first thing you said to me, Wu.
Oh God.
Is that a climbing rope in your backpack, or are you just happy to see me?
Listen, you got to be memorable, okay?
All right.
For a long time now, actually.
Yeah. In Sarah's basement.
Yep, that's where we met.
And then we went to the old Oakville Hydro Operations building by the GO station.
When it was still there, kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember where that was.
It was a parking lot now.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's like, I also remember the old basket factory at the risk of seriously dating myself. But in reality, and I on a few Oakville, Ontario nostalgia groups, they always reminisce about a person. I think it was something straight out of a Stephen King novel, complete with the monster in the basement.
There we go.
So, yeah, that I don't. Yeah, I kind of forget even what the basket factory looked like.
I'll send you a link to my photo from the Hydro place.
Okay.
It's not the one that's further down Trafalgar Road. That's still an empty sort of a lot. This was a sort of a brown brick building.
Okay.
So.
Did you ever go to the, I think it was like a Park Plaza Hotel. That's kind of by Oakville Place. It was a long time ago.
I would go there when I worked at STC because I could just walk across the road and get my urban exploration fix on my lunch break.
Is that the old low rise that used to be a Holiday Inn or a Modern?
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, damn. That was where we stayed our first night in Oakville back in 19.
Wasn't there some kind of psychiatric hospital somewhere around there?
Oh, that right, there was a youth right detention it, yeah. center called SILAPS, and it
still
was
there.
And I heard stories about that place. It was just like I remember visiting the hospital with mom with one of her health episodes and seeing a kid come in handcuffs. It looked like he got something. The cat got dragged in, so it looked like he had been second best in a severe disagreement with a fellow inmate.
Ouch.
When I moved to my third and final office at STC, I was promptly briefed on what to do if a person managed to get out of that facility and found themselves on campus and security didn't catch them. Because we had one security guard for STC, and it was usually an older gentleman who could not move so fast. So they put the young IT guy close by and was basically told, you call the cops and you try to stop them.
Well, not in photography, it's photography related, but very Oakville, Ontario, deep cuts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Well, for me, I'm going to be a bit over the map here. For me, the film is Kodak Tri-X. Now, Tri-X wasn't the very first film I ever developed. That would be T-Max 400 in D76, and it sort of got me started. And then I tried a bunch of Ilford films in Ilfacil 3, and they were all right. And then I did Kodak Tri-X in HC110 Dilution B for 4.5 minutes, and the results were absolutely spectacular. Like, if there was something that would say, yes, this is something you need to keep doing, it was that combination. I know most people say you can't develop film for under 5 minutes. I say, well, I've gotten excellent results from 4.5 minutes, so you can go shove your 5 minutes where the sun don't shine. Because honestly, if Kodak says it works, I will trust Kodak. If Ilford says it works, I will trust Ilford, and so on and so forth. This was shot at the very first photo stock event I ever went to in 2012. And I did some absolutely delightful, like casual, like street style portraits around the hotel that the event took place at. What's the name of the place?
That place.
Yes. It's in Harbor Springs, Michigan. And if you've ever seen the original Parent, if you've ever seen the Parent Trap, kind of gives off that 60s vibe. Like, if you're into nostalgic motels, this is the place. And the joys of editing, I can cut this all out.
It's really quiet all of a sudden.
Birchwood Inn. That's the place. If you're ever in Harbor Springs and just want a dose of 60s nostalgia, the Birchwood Inn is definitely the place to stay. I'm actually kind of sad that Photostock has had to move out of the Birchwood into Cross Village, but they've been welcomed with open arms thanks to Bill Schwab. And Photostock is still happening. It did survive the pandemic. And it is happening this year. So definitely check out Photostock if you're wanting to go up to the Michigan, well out of Detroit. It's actually a beautiful part of the state. Camera. This is a tough one because, again, like James and Bill, I have used a lot of cameras out there. I could go with the first camera I ever bought, the Minolta Hi-Matic 7S, the Minolta SRT-102, my first SLR, the Zenit B, the SLR that made me want to actually try a SLR that I could actually figure out how to use. I originally wanted to choose the Contax G2. It's a great camera, but it is incredibly frustrating. But the one thing I realized about the Contax G2 is that I didn't like the camera. I liked the lens.
Agreed. The camera was a pain in the ass to shoot.
45mm f2 planar.
Yeah. I'm
planar
with the Contax G2. I have no experience with it whatsoever. Sort of wanted one, but it was just, I heard about people saying it's either they love it or they found it very frustrating.
It was the pinnacle of like late 80s technology. So LCD screens, it had a an automatic yet manual focus dial on it. So you didn't actually turn the lens barrel to manually focus it. You had a rotating dial.
But there was no range finder patch either. So
Exactly.
as soon as you took it off autofocus, it was a guess focus camera.
Oh, Jesus, no.
Yeah. And
And the autofocus was inconsistent, and the EV adjustment dial was too easily moved. So I was in Antwerp, and I overexposed a roll of FP4 by a couple of stops, and I didn't realize it until about halfway through this roll. Thankfully, because it was FP4, I was able to recover the images or some of it, but you can definitely see that delineation. But it's that planar lens design that I loved so much. And the great part is because I have my Rolleiflex, I still have that wonderful planar glass,
There you go.
that 80 f2.8. And but again, that camera is the F4, the
Okay.
Nikon F4.
Oh, the F4 is a gorgeous camera.
And it was the same camera that I used for that one roll of Tri-X that I developed and made me realize that yes, no, I love Tri-X. And it's really a shame, but good at the same time that the price of Tri-X has come down. I don't shoot it as much anymore. I've found other four I usually tend to shy away from 400 speed films these days. I usually go with like FP4 and Fomapan. I will shoot Foma 400. It's an absolutely great film
I
as
adore
well.
Fomapan 400. It just I've been shooting that a lot of late, and some people have said it has sort of an almost Tri-X look from the 70s. And since I'm looking for a 1970s vibe, well, hello, here we go. And it's easy. It's Ilfatech HC 1-31 or HC 110 HC 110B dilution B. For 7 minutes flat at 20 degrees centigrade, the negatives dry flat as a pancake, which cannot be the same, cannot be said for Kodak Tri-X in a Great Lakes environment.
Any Tri-X, any Kodak film, the cupping is horrible
I don't
from
know what the
T-Max 100 to 400 to double X to Tri-X. I don't
I
know what
don't
they do.
I, yeah, and that's at first I thought it was okay, maybe it's the humidity in my house, or is it like workflow, or is it because I'm hanging it in the basement furnace room to dry? In the end, if it's like everyone's cupping, it's like then it's like a manufacturer issue, like something with the emulsion and the base layer is kind of causing things to kind of cup.
Who knows?
I just back roll the film and leave it in a canister for a week, and then the problem solves itself out. Yeah,
Yeah, I get the same thing with Akros.
there are a couple of brands that suffer from it, like Berger with their Pancro 400. It suffers that as well a wee bit.
Has to be the acetate.
Yeah, maybe they're buying acetate from a certain supplier, and it's just. But Ilford doesn't have that problem, and
So, which is weird.
neither does Fomapan, because they use acetate with their 35 millimeter stocks.
No, they're polyester.
Not that that's
No?
35 mil. 35 mil is acetate. They're buying
Oh.
their acetate from somebody else. I
Maybe
think
the same.
the 120 is polyester.
Probably.
But 35 mil from my experience is acetate. It's not indestructible like polyester, that's for sure. Ask Bill how he knows when he initially tried to load his 3F.
Well, at least it's not as thin as like Svema 200.
Ooh, tissue paper.
I've
Tissue
been.
paper has more backbone than Smevma 200.
I did my. I shot my first roll of FPP infrared black and white, and it is thin. Like we're talking Svema 200 thin, but I don't know for sure if it is that because it loaded a little too easily onto my reels. So I do not know what this film stock actually is. Again, thinking Svema 200, but not 100% sure. Now, location. Again, tons of great abandoned buildings. The Firestone plant in Hamilton. definitely springs to mind for me. It's where I really learned to appreciate the original FQ films. And Ektar 100, I got some of my favorite shots there on the Rolleiflex with the planar and the square format. But I'm going to have to say Montreal. It was my third paid vacation. So it was, the idea of paid vacation was still very new to me. Like, wait a minute, what? I have money and time off that I can go do a trip on my own. This is wonderful. So I went to Montreal in the fall. The weather was awful. I took a train ride there. I dragged my luggage from Bonaventure Station up to Rue St. Catherine. But I can clearly see a change between how I photographed everything from before I went to Montreal to after I went to Montreal. It's almost as if everything just suddenly started to make sense, not in the technical side of things, because again, I had my Rolleiflex, I had my Nikon F4. I usually ran the F4 with in full program mode, and the Rolleiflex has a fully functioning metering on it, but it was more in my understanding of how I like to compose images. Right, I usually went for like leading lines, a lot of very flat compositions, especially when doorways. I seem to have photographed a lot of doors in Montreal. Use of ultra wide lenses is another thing. Like, I really got to know my 14 to 24 millimeter lens on that trip. I did use it on my F4 because it does work in program mode. But yeah, I have since been able to go back to Montreal on my first wedding anniversary with my wife, and I am looking forward to going back in October this year with, again, Heather and my son.
Are you going to visit Expo Rail?
Yes, that is on the hit list.
I am originally from Montreal, and it's funny because I never really photographed Montreal, so it's technically, while there is some nostalgia, there is nostalgia, but from a photographic sense, there isn't. I'd have to like wander. And again, it's sort of like, I'd be almost a little scared in some regards because I've done Google Street Views of my old neighborhood, and it has not changed all that much compared to parts of basically all of Southern Ontario. It's just Southern Ontario is just reinventing itself. But it's sort of like, you're kind of left going, this is where I grew up. I don't have any connection to the city anymore. Like, any classmates from elementary school, I've long scattered. I have no living family in Montreal. My grandparents are interred there, but that's about it. It's like everybody's, is in Ontario or points elsewhere. And the grand irony is my family migrated to Montreal from Ontario in the early 1920s. So it's not that deep roots. It's more, it's where I grew up, but it's, I don't know. I'd have to walk the city with my camera and go to neighborhoods that I remember as a kid. It would be an interesting experiment.
I think the back would be kind of right, actually. If you had photos, whether you took it or your father took it or your family members took it of the neighborhood, if you go back, like now, and you take pictures around the same area, kind of seeing how like things like have changed. I think about this in the perspective of like on Facebook, there's like a, I think it's vintage Toronto or like old Toronto where they have like the snapshots of like, this is such and such a street. And they take a picture from like the 70s and a picture of it from like 2015 or 2020, just seeing how things are like, are the same, but also kind of different. I think of Scarborough that way, because I think a lot of things have the base buildings are still there, but it's still just like more built up around the area. I think that would make for a very fun like photo experiment. Even like just, again, Oakville, the Oakville Hospital, that area has like where the old hospital
is. It's changed beyond recognition. The only thing that's left is the parking garage.
Oh, yeah, that too. I was thinking like the old high school, the old OT, because every time I go see my mom at like the Wyndham, I see it every single time. It's like, oh.
Yeah, that's interesting because for those, Chrissy and I, for those listening, we went to the same high school, Oakville Trafalgar High School. It moved in 1992.
I don't know when it moved. I just know I was like in like the new school.
Yeah, I was in the old school and they shut the old school down due to, well, I don't know, but it just wouldn't pass code in this day and age. And I'll be kind. I think there was a spot on the main floor that you don't want to jump up and down too hard. You'll wind up in the basement.
Jeez.
Yeah, there's a spot where the wooden floor is a little soft.
Spongy.
Yes.
I'm sure you learned
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but it's even like downtown Oakville's changed beyond recognition. It's like,
oh,
so much. Yeah. I used to work downtown Oakville.
The streetscape hasn't changed, but it's all the retailers have just.
I'm thinking Kerr Street. I used to work on Kerr Street, and just this is like in like 2010. But I think about it when I was like in high school in like early 2000s or like late 90s, early 2000s, and then like going down there at that point. And when I worked down there in like 2015-ish time period and like walking down the area now, very different every single time, every iteration. So
I have this album on Flickr called Random Oakville. And in 2011, I was in downtown Oakville shooting my only roll of Kodachrome 25.
Oh, ooh.
And I have a photo of the Odd Fellows Hall and the building next to it at the intersection of Lakeshore and Navy. And that building right on the corner, which is now a travel agent, was a Second Cup.
And right next door was a variety store called Hennessy's. The guy who owned it was a real character.
Yep, with fine imported Cuban cigars.
Well, I remember that store.
I have that photo too, the Odd Fellows Hall. But it's like, I walk past and I photograph that block all the time now. And it's like, it's been 10 years and how much of it has changed in a decade.
Oh, for sure. It's like, I think the only stores left in Oakville that I remember, I think it's Burroughs Clothiers, Oliver's Steakhouse, which has changed hands, but it's still Oliver's Steakhouse, and Croissant Express.
And again, along Navy Street at 68, there the building, it's now gone, but it has like an old beat up, Dodge with a completely flat front tire.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
It was
I remember this too. I was like, oh no, I actually know the way you're talking about.
I photographed that Dodge. I think I shot it on my Minolta XE7.
There we are. My dad to the rescue. 1958 Dodge Coronet or Lancer.
There you go.
There you go.
He even left a comment on my Flickr.
Oh, there you go. I think I even have a couple of shots of Bill Hill's ice cream shop in Bronte.
Nice.
I heard they tried to burn it down, but the building was so waterlogged.
No.
That sounds about right, actually.
And it's funny because it's a taste of the old Bronte that just doesn't exist. I have to like dig those negatives out after my move and rescan them.
There we go.
Yeah, sort of a to-do project that I'll get to someday.
Well, this episode turned out a lot better than I thought. It's always fun to try something new with a podcast, and walking down memory lane especially with you folks has been absolutely marvelous. So until next time, folks, my name's Alex Lokes. Shoot what you love with what you love on what you love. Don't stop.
Hey, this is James Lee. Great conversation tonight, guys. Nostalgia and photography, it definitely reminds us that, you never really understand the true value of a moment until it really becomes a memory. Get out there and shoot. Turn those moments into memories.
This is Bill Smith. I'm going to echo both Alex and James. Yeah. Stay cool, shoot tons of film, and capture those moments so they are memories that you can remember.
And I guess I'm going to run it out. This is Chris. Always a pleasure talking with you guys. And going down this memory lane, I guess. It's been a real treat. But yeah, I just want to say thanks again. And I'll see you guys later. Thanks a lot, guys, gals, and non-binary pals.